the O, and the Dub. Welcome to Junior, the CHL podcast with Jeff Marek and Sam Cosentino. From now until the MasterCard Memorial Cup, this is the destination for news, opinion, and prospects. No one does the CHL like this.
Well, Sam Cosentino, here we are again, another edition of Junior, the CHL podcast. And today's edition will be a full MasterCard Memorial Cup preview. We know the four teams, thanks to the Oshawa Generals taking out the Erie Otters last Friday. So the field is set. It is the Kelowna Rockets representing the Western Hockey League. The two from Quebec, who, by the way, are in a Game 7 tonight. Way to make things easy on yourselves, boys. The Quebec Ramparts, Rimouski Oceanic, and from the Ontario Hockey League, the Oshawa Generals. None of these can be considered a surprise, can they, Sam?
No, I don't think so. I mean, everyone was excited about Erie and Connor McDavid, but I think when you look at it in seven-game series, they tell you what the truth is and what it's not. And the fact of the matter was Oshawa was the better team there. When you look at Kelowna and Brandon, those are the best two teams in the Western Hockey League all season long. The only surprise for me, Jeff, would have been a sweep, although, yep. You know, there would have been all the expectations of one of those two teams coming out if you had it prognosticated back in January. And then Rimouski, for me, right from the start of the year, was deemed as a top team. We knew Quebec was going to be the host. So I guess if there's any surprise in all of this, it's probably that Quebec was able to make it to the league final. Really, yeah. Other than that, no real surprises. But I think the Quebec Ramparts finished fourth this year. You know, would that have been a surprise? Based on, you know, when we saw them in February, somewhat inconsistent. But really, since we left town and moving forward, they've played pretty well, and you can't argue with the 11-game win streak that they had going on after games 1 and 2 of the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League President Cup Final. And so that would be the only surprise, I guess, in that regard, would be that Quebec made it to the league final.
Speaking of the Ramparts and the Oceanic, Andre and Barbeau will be joining us from TV. We'll get a breakdown of that series and a preview of what we can expect from those two teams. As I mentioned, Game 7 tonight. Mike Luck will join us, Oshawa Generals play-by-play voice. The Jennies, as we all know, are through. And Dan Lambert, the head coach of the Kelowna Rockets, will drop by the broadcast. So it is an action-packed hour, probably plus, that you have with us this week on Junior. Reviewing the game that was last Friday on Friday Night Hockey, we saw the Oshawa Generals take care of the Erie Otters in 5 games. Some say that's convincing fashion. Regardless, it does spell the end of the junior hockey career of one Connor McDavid. First year in the league, he got 66 points. Second year in the league, he got 99 points. In the playoffs, he accumulated 68 collective points. Those are hockey royalty numbers, sir. What do you make of the junior career of Connor McDavid?
Yeah, pretty spectacular. The best player that I've seen. I know RG and I talked about it at the end of the broadcast in that game in Oshawa. But at this age, he's the best player that I've seen. And that includes games that I've called with Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon, Steven Stamkos, John Tavares, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. You know, the list goes on and on. But the fact of the matter for me is at this age, at this point in his career, he's the best I've seen. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean it's going to translate into being a rock star National Hockey League career, although that would be my expectation. And to say that he's going to be a better player than any of those players at the end of their National Hockey League careers is a bit of a reach too, because you have to go out and do it, and you have to be healthy, and you have to have a little bit of luck on your side, and you have to play on a pretty good team. All of those things have to come together. But, you know, when we're looking back at this thing 20 and 25 years from now, Jeff, I think we're going to say that this guy is maybe that one guy in 50 years, you know, that has come along. And he might be one guy that every 10 years or 20 years comes along. But anyway, you slice it, he's the best I've seen. It was a true pleasure to be able to call as many games as we did with him being involved, and I loved every minute of it.
You know, the point that I've been making about Connor McDavid since his Erie Otters got eliminated in 5 by Oshawa is that we go back to 2005, Sam, when the NHL redid itself and it became a new league, and the premium was on skill and it was on speed and it was the fly zone between the blue lines. And all those rules changes, of course, trickled down all the way to minor hockey. And I think we've always waited for, going back to 2005, that one breakthrough superstar that didn't have to adjust to these rules, but were born into these rules and grew up in this environment and grew up with the accent on speed and the accent on skill and the accent on this quote-unquote new game. That guy is Connor McDavid. He's that new generation of hockey player that didn't have to make an adjustment because this is the only way he's known hockey to be played.
You know what, Jeff? You make an excellent point there. And, you know, you think about that at the time, you know, he's a 97 born, and then you think about going now and moving forward. How old is he at that time when that happened? Oh, okay, that all starts to make sense now. He's 14, 15 years old. And it's interesting, you know, that by the time, as you say, you know, he's 8 or 9 years old when this, all this stuff gets implemented, but by the time he gets to 14, you're right, he's grown up in that, and so he's used to it more than anyone previous to him, and it looks like the generation following is going to be much the same way. And, you know, you see some of that hope when it comes to the Q draft and the OHL draft, the Western Hockey League draft that was just completed. So it is fascinating to see that we're in that generation now where these players, as you mentioned, have grown up knowing all they've ever known were the rules that we're seeing today in the National Hockey League. Yeah, really good point.
Yeah, it really does spell well for the entire CHL, well, for the entire hockey world, for that matter. All right, to the Oshawa Generals, they take care of the Erie Otters. Cole Castles was front and center, living as much as he could in the pocket of Connor McDavid and excelling himself by putting up points, goals, and assists. That line with Latour and Hunter Smith was outstanding. When we look back on this series, I'm guessing the conversation quickly will turn to Cole Castles. Your thoughts on the Vancouver prospect coming out of the series clincher?
As it should. And you know what? When you first saw this guy, you know, everyone, oh, okay, he's an NHLer's son. And then I think last year started to make his own identity as a bit different player than his father. And this year, I mean, he's just taken it to an entirely different level. He is the epitome of what that, you know, everyone's talking about now, that 200-foot game. Oh, yeah, he plays both ends. I mean, he wins face-offs. He plays with a nasty edge to his game that really plays, you know, in today's game because of, you know, the non-fighting and that sort of thing. He can get under your skin. He's good in the defensive zone. He's highly responsible. He's got good vision, shooting the puck really well. I was impressed. And you know what, Jeff? At the end of the series in its entirety, he was the best player in the series. And you know, good on Ken Appleby. He was really good. And Josh Brown was really good. And Connor McDavid, when Erie was at home, was really good. But Cole Castles, to me, and it wasn't really close, was the best player in the series.
He was outstanding, and you're right about Appleby as well. With all due respect to the netminder from North Bay, this was the Cole Castle series for a lot of people. But I do want to ask you, what was that building like on Friday? Closeout games at home for something like that has got to be special. To me, you know, the big takeaway is hearing the entire place chant Appleby over and over again. And, you know, we saw him, you know, playing backup behind Daniel Altschuler for the past couple of years, and confidence was a factor at times for Ken Appleby. Had, you know, didn't get drafted, had a wonderful season this year, as we've talked about on the podcast countless times. To me, hearing General Motors Center chanting his name was the icing on the cake.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, the building really started to rock and roll just when the anthem started to get going. That's how electric it was in there. And, you know, the people, a lot of those people have been season ticket holders forever and ever, and so they remember 97. Some of them even go back to 1990 and remember Eric Lindros and the MasterCard Memorial Cup win for Oshawa with Freddie Brathwaite that year and so on. So, you know, it'd been a long time coming. You know, GM, what, a month ago announced another 1,000 layoffs from the General Motors plant in Oshawa, so that, you know, sucks for the city. And it's not that undifferent from what happened in 2009. And I can remember that was when the auto industry was taking a real beating, and that's when Windsor went on to win that year. And there were a lot of people that said, hey, this is a great departure from, you know, the sadness of losing jobs or the depression of the economy and all those sorts of things. And I think that rings true here with Oshawa. So being in that building, hearing and feeling those people, there's nothing like it. And you know, Jeff, like every time you show up at the Memorial Cup, it's so much different. You get a feel for it on TV, but until you're sitting in it, in the midst of it, and hear what's going on and seeing how excited the people are, I mean, that you know, that's one of the coolest parts about the job that I have, that you know, always being on site. So, you know, to get back to your question, the building was absolutely electric. Great appreciation for Appleby, for penalty kills, for shifts where they hemmed Erie into the offensive, you know, into a defensive mindset there, and had him in the offensive zone for long periods of time. And appreciating the blue collar guy, you know, Hunter Smith always got cheered. Bradley Latour, I mean, he's an Oshawa general, the epitome of an Oshawa general. Appleby, I mean, really, it's only his first year of playing, you know, at this level when you look at him being a backup in that. So it was neat. And the building was, I mean, it was on fire. It was really, really, really loud.
Yeah, and you know, when you look at that Oshawa Generals team too, of course we'll focus on Cole Castles, and you know you mentioned someone like Bradley Latour. Matt Mistley was fantastic. Michael Delcole, the Islanders draft pick, but man, was that defense good. And you know, the big four, which are really the big five, Van de Sompel, Brown, Mermis, Carlisle, and you throw Stephen DeRoche in there as well, to say nothing of Stephen Templeton. That's a really nice back end. And listen, Sam, at the end of the day, defense wins championships. We saw it with Oshawa.
Yeah. Yeah, and it worked well, and it's probably the most underrated defensive core, because there isn't that huge name. I mean, Mitch Van de Sompel, what's he going to become? A draft eligible guy. So, you know, really, he's had a good year as a 16-year-old, but, you know, I wouldn't call him a superstar, at least yet. Carlisle, the same thing. But Stephen DeRoche is a fascinating guy for me, because I was speaking, with Eric Wellwood, about, you know, he runs the defensive side of the bench. Yep. And he said, you know, when Pechnik was in our lineup, you know, he really solidified our top five guys. Well, previous to him going down, we started to give DeRoche some more important minutes, but I still had a hard time really fully trusting him to getting him out there in key situations. Well, when Pechnik left, they didn't have a choice. He had to be vaulted up into that five spot, and he continued to work his way up right through, you know, and you could make an argument that he might even be the three guy right now heading into the MasterCard Memorial Cup. It really showed an offensive flair to his game, a guy who's got good size. He skates well. His mobility and agility isn't great, but his skating stride in terms of, you know, north-south is pretty good. I think he's a guy that by the time the Cup ends, you know, he's already on the NHL Central Scouting list, but probably a guy who's going to solidify at least a pick in the top, you know, in the seven rounds of the draft, as opposed to maybe if his season were to end against Erie, then who knows what would have happened there. But I think he gets picked now.
We'll talk to Mike Luck, play-by-play voice of the Oshawa Generals, coming up a little bit later on in the podcast. All right, quickly, the Western Hockey League, we talked about it a little bit last week, Sam, a little bit more on the Kelowna Rockets. They go in on a 7-game winning streak. The last loss, Game 3 of the Western Conference Final against Portland. It's a team that, well, Sam, to be quite honest with you, hit its stride at the exact perfect time.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, because we saw some of it after the trade deadline and after, you know, Draisaitl and, you know, Morrissey comes back from the World Juniors, and those two guys are kind of on their own deal. And then there's Quinney and Braden. You know, there's some pieces added. So really, it took a lot longer, I think, for this team to gel. And I think if you ask Bruce Hamilton and you ask Danny Lambert, they would tell you the same thing. But you're bang on. I think they peaked right about the time they were hitting Portland. And that was extremely important to get over that hump. It had been Portland who'd knocked them out in three of the last 4 years, you know, in the playoffs. And so to get over that mental hump, with a lot of those guys have been, you know, familiar to at least two of those defeats, that it was important to get through that. And they did. And that's, to me, where they started to peak. And, you know, to think that they rolled over Brandon, the number one team in the Western Hockey League at the end of the year in four straight. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That tells me that they're firing in all cylinders. And look who led the way. Look who was the MVP.
Yeah, Leon Draisaitl, 28 points in 19 games. And that was the first time in 24 years that Bruce Hamilton traded a first-round draft pick. He just doesn't do that. But for Leon Draisaitl, he made the exception. We'll talk to Dan Lambert, Kelowna head coach, a little bit later on. In the meantime, I'll wrap up the opening segment here, Sam, by talking a little bit about Quebec and Rimouski. They're not doing this the easy way. They're not doing this the homer way either. Nobody wants to seem to win at home in this one. It's a reminder of the old St. John's Adirondack Calder Cup final from the 1990s, where every game was won on the road by the respective team. You hate to say it, they'll be exhausted come Friday, but are we going to see two tired teams from the Quebec League? We'll ask Andréanne Barbeau here in a couple of seconds if she thinks so. What do you think? Do we have a couple of tired Quebec League squads on the horizon?
It's probably the perfect schedule, and I'll tell you why, Jeff, because it's going to replicate a lot of what you see in the regular season, where you finish up on a Sunday, in this case a Monday because it's the holidays, and then you wait and you start play again Friday. Quebec, in particular, was really honing in on keeping its routine and keeping its schedule. You know, that's one thing Phil Boucher was a big believer in, eating at the same places at the same time, you know, and trying to keep that routine to replicate the regular season as much as possible. So I think it's going to serve them well because there'll be just enough time to heal up a couple of little bumps and bruises. It won't be enough time for anyone who's got anything more serious than that, unfortunately. But it also can keep you in the groove. And I think for Quebec, it probably benefits them most because regardless of what happens, if you win, you're riding the high. You have to put the high away and get ready for Friday. If you lose, it's like a closer in baseball. You get right back at it Friday and you can open the tournament on a positive note. So I think Quebec of the two teams has the most to benefit from this thing going seven games.
Who do you think starts tonight for Rimouski in net?
I don't know if he'll end it. Yeah, that's. I think Gendon. I think Gendon's the guy who's going to end up starting there. It's been fascinating to watch. I mean, who'd have thunk it that you play both goalies in three of the first six games, yet you're still tied at three. It makes no sense to me. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. So I guess flip a coin. No, but probably Gendon. That would be my guess. Andréan might have a better sense.
We'll talk to her in a couple of seconds on that. We'll take our first pause of this week's podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. We come back. We'll pick up the conversation and talk about Quebec, the Ramparts, Rimouski, the Oceanic, with Andréan Barbeau from TVA.
I'm Jonathan Durant from the Tampa Bay Lightning. I play for the Halifax Mooseheads in the Major Junior League.
Welcome back to the podcast. Jeff Merrick alongside Sam Cosentino. We teed up just before the break there, Sam, talking about the Ramparts and the Oceanic and how it seems as if nobody wants to win at home. This one may be decided on the road or may be decided at home, depending on who wins tonight. It is a Game 7 President's Cup Final. Andréan Barbeau joins us from TVA. She's a very well-traveled reporter. How tired are you at this point, Andréan?
Yeah, we're quite tired. I mean, we're not playing, but we've been traveling a lot. It's our third time in Rimouski so far in 2 weeks. So let's hope for Memorial Cup soon. It's enough now.
It's almost like it's too close because you have to make the drive. I mean, if it was further away, if it was in the Maritimes, then at least you could hop on a plane. But being as close as it is to Quebec City, unfortunately, you got to drive. So that's made things a little more difficult, probably on everyone. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, exactly. It's like 3 hours, 3 hours 30 for us. So we have to drive the technical team too, of course. So, but it's a lot of work. But we've been so lucky to have this final series here in Quebec. So we can't ask for more.
Is this the most bizarre series you've ever covered? We've seen goaltending flip-flops. We've seen huge lead changes. We've seen overtime. We've seen the road team win every single game. Is this the most bizarre one you've been part of?
Yeah, I think so. It's a really strange series. I mean, there's a lot of things going on. First two games are in parts one here in Rimouski, then Rimouski won in the big Colisée full of crazy fans. I know you guys were there for one of the game and people were crazy. Yesterday, same thing again, two overtime. Game really, really short overtime, spectacular flip-flop of goalies, as you said. So, yeah, it's been really strange but really exciting. I think the fans are the big winners so far.
Andréan, when I looked at the highlights of last night's game, it kind of cut off at the time when I was really interested in watching. But the goal that was scored by Kostelec, Fucali gives up the goal. He skates out of the net, and then he turns back. And I think he was looking back at Adam Ernie. Did the puck go off a skate, or did Ernie impede the vision of Fucali at all? Or was there any exchange there, or was it just me seeing things?
I think you're right, Sam. But you know what? It has been like this for the whole series. I mean, every time you think one of the team has the momentum, has the rhythm in the game, something happened. A bad save, a bad goal, a good goal. It's going crazy since the beginning. So I mean, yesterday night we thought the Ramparts had the rhythm of this game, and then suddenly it changed. Kostelec played a really, really good series so far. So we're not surprised to see him bounce back in yesterday's game. But yeah, it's a little bit crazy, but that's a final series.
Who's impressed you the most from either side?
Adam Ernie for the Quebec Ramparts for sure has been really, really good. He's a game changer for since the first game of the series against Cape Breton. Like, was it 1 year ago? I don't remember. I mean, Adam Ernie has been really, really good. Might win the MVP tonight. And for Rimouski, I just talk about Jan Kostelec. He has been really good. For the goaltending, I think Louis-Philippe Quinton has been really solid in front of his net, even if he has to gave his place to Desrosiers, but he has been the most solid one of the goalie. Fuchs has been really good also for the Quebec Ramparts, but I would say the two MVPs for the team will be Adam Ernie and maybe Jan Kostalek or even Christopher Clapperton for Rimouski. He's an overrated player, really, really efficient in his zone, really efficient in offensive. So there's a lot of talent in those two teams. I mean, there's a guy like Kurt Echigari, the captain from the Ramparts. He's playing very well, too. So I know there's a lot of talented players.
Sam and I were just joking before you came on. Do we know who's starting tonight for Rimouski?
Yeah, it's Philippe Desrosiers.
Oh, it's DeRozier.
Wow.
Holy
shit. Wow.
That's exactly the reaction I had. Wow.
Stop the show. Stop the show. Oh, my goodness. Hey, you know what? That makes a good question, Andrean, because you're so well connected with both coaching staffs, and it's the dynamic is fascinating because Boucher hired Beausoleil, and then even going back to earlier in the year, you know, Beausoleil says, Philippe, he can't handle the pressure. And then after the rest in the series, because the series has been drawn out a little bit, Beausoleil says, oh yeah, this, everything that the Ramparts do, the whole league caters around the Ramparts, oh yeah, it's to favor the Ramparts, this and that, and then they go out and win the next two games in Quebec. I mean, talk about the coaches here in how much different the approach is from Serge Beausoleil to Philippe Boucher.
Beausoleil is well experimented as a head coach, more than Philippe Boucher, of course, and I think he's really good with the words. He knows when it's time to speak and when it's not time to speak. And I think Philippe Boucher is a little bit more emotive on that. I think he reacted well so far when Serge attacked him a little bit. You said about what the Ramparts want, like the schedule. I know it's TV decided the schedule because the TVA didn't want to be in conflict with the Habs schedule in playoffs. But suddenly it was the Ramparts' fault. So okay, then it was the tapes war. I mean, both teams send clips to the league, and it was Philippe Boucher's fault again. So one day Philippe Boucher said, "You know what? I think Serge is trying to find an excuse." And then Serge told us what excuse and whatever. So it's junior stuff so far. But I think Serge Beausoleil is a little bit more experimented on it. He's really quiet, and that's a big factor for him, a big plus for his team, I think. Philippe Boucher is a little bit more emotive, sensitive about that, but it's not going too far. So we'll see tonight before the game how quiet they will be, but so far, so good.
Who, you know, Jeff, go ahead, Sammy.
Sorry, if I can just interject for one sec, because it's been fascinating. We've watched Serge Beausoleil since he came into the league, you know, as a rookie coach. And the last time RJ and I and Falzi were in there, I noticed a lot more edge to his game. He seemed to be over the top nice when we first met him a couple of years ago. And not that he wasn't nice and accommodating, but it seems to me, Andrean, there's a lot more edge there. I don't know if it's the pressure, if he's feeling comfortable now because he has the dual role. Do you sense that in Serge Beausoleil, maybe a difference from when he came into the league to now?
Actually, I think from now he's more like the first year I've known him as a head coach in the league. He was really quiet, really humble. And then during one or two seasons, he was a little bit, over the edge, as you said. And then right now, he's really, really comfortable. And he's doing miracle with this team. I know his team was the favorite one since last August. Everybody knew that Rimouski would head up to the Memorial Cup. But he's doing nice thing. Yeah, he has a lot of talented players with, Morin, Clapperton, Gauthier and everything. But he also have Sanson, Bolin, Bourque at the D-line. And he's doing really, really great things with them. And I think the guys, they just follow him everywhere he want to go during the game. The team stay quiet even if it's hard, even if they are two goals behind. And I think that's why he is now so comfortable. I think he is confident about his team. He was still laughing yesterday with the boys and everything. So now I think he's really good. This is his season, and he might have a few chances in the future for going up. I don't know.
We shall see. Let me ask you about Philippe Boucher, and one maybe obvious question. Considering his previous role How much of an advantage would he have, given that he knows, I would imagine, pretty much every single player on the Oceanic because he put them there?
Yeah, it can be an advantage, but I think everybody in this team know the talented players of the Rimouski because they have been on the spot for the last 2 or 3 years. Philippe Boucher, he built the foundation of this team, but Serge Beausoleil just had the finition with Clapperton, Baudouin, Guindon, and everything. So might be an advantage, but he's not coaching this team. He has a lot of his plates, enough on his plates with the Ramparts so far. So I think might be really emotive for him to be here in Rimouski. Lots of distraction, but he's doing great so far. And anyway, I think Serge Beausoleil knows very well the players of Quebec Ramparts. I mean, Adam Ernie, Anthony Duclair, Guillaume Gauthier played in Rimouski 1 year. Katchev is in the league for a while now. Marc-Olivier Roy, too. So I don't think it's a big advantage, but of course, he knows that players very well.
Okay, Andrean, it's the million-dollar question. What's your sense about tonight's game? I mean, is it the home team? Is it going to be a goalie that stands on his head? What's your feeling after seeing the reaction of the two teams from Game 6? You know, Quebec's a minute and 1 second away from winning the title, and the next thing you know, they're headed to Rimouski to play in Game 7. What's your sense for tonight's game?
It's tough. Maybe $2 million question. I don't know. It has been really painful yesterday for the Ramparts to lose that game. They were 1 minute away from the cup. Everything was ready. Everyone was ready. And then they lost. So I don't know. I think the momentum, the rhythm is on Rimouski's side. But I think Rimouski has a lot of pressure when they play here at the Colisée. So it might help the Ramparts. But I will stick to my first prediction. I told 2 weeks ago Rimouski will win in 7 games, so I will stick to it.
Wow.
But I'm not sure at all.
Look
we'll
at you.
Yeah.
We shall see. And the last question we have for you, and we thank you for your time, Andre, and certainly. Sammy flies out tomorrow. I fly out on Thursday. What can we expect in Quebec for the Memorial Cup? What's the vibe? What's the atmosphere like? How's the city going to present the Memorial Cup this year?
It will be well organized for sure. The Quebec Ramparts, they have experience in organization like that with the World Hockey Championship in 2008. It's the same organization committee. So it will be well organized from the beginning until the end. I think the vibe is really good, especially with the Ramparts in final. I know yesterday it was really, really painful for the 10,000 fans in the Colisée, but lots of them will be back next week. I think nobody expected the Ramparts in final this year, and they proved they have their place in the Memorial Cup as the host team. So you'll see in Quebec City is a very beautiful city. During the spring, it will be awesome. Let's hope for good weather, and you'll see the fans and the people here in Quebec. I know a lot of people will come from outside the town to see games. So I guess the Colisée will not be full. I don't think they will be full because it's a 15,000 seats building, but mm-hmm. We should have a good crowd around 8,000, 10,000 every night, I hope, for that.
Well, we look forward to it. It should come off great on television as well. Andrean, thank you so much, as always, for stopping by and sharing your expertise and your prediction of Rimouski winning this game this evening.
Unbelievable.
We look forward to seeing you in QC.
We'll see you later this week in Quebec.
So, Sammy, there you have it. Barbeau says Rimouski in 7. So it's a comment dit en français, as we say in French, un fait accompli. Take that one to the bank and put in a long-term deposit. Result is guaranteed.
Well, you know what? She's as connected as anyone in the league over there, and I've watched her, you know, work from a distance, helps out because we do stuff simultaneously with the CHL during the MasterCard Memorial Cup. So, I've watched her going back to the Cup in 2012 in Shawinigan. So she's and just seeing how she interacts with people around the league and the coaches, she's extremely well connected. So a wonderful source for us to have on, no question.
And how about dropping the bomb? DeRocher gets to start in net tonight, not Guindon.
That shocks me. I thought that that Serge Beausoleil had lost all confidence in Philippe Durocher, but when you look at it on paper, second round pick at Dallas, back 2 years ago, he was the best goalie in the world in his age group as he guided Canada to a gold medal in the World Under 18 Championships, which don't forget isn't Canada's best team because most of those kids, the best kids, are still playing in the CHL. So you know, you take those two things into account, which is something I always hearken on when watching Durocher, and say that it's there. You know, it's just a matter of getting his head to work around his game, his head to his to catch up to his game and his athleticism and so on and so forth. So monumental task in this one. And I don't think this is where this goaltending story ends, win or lose for Rimouski, Jeff.
No, it will be one that we will follow starting Friday at the MasterCard Memorial Cup. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to the play-by-play voice of the Oshawa Generals. Mike Luck drops by the Junior Podcast.
Hi, I'm Nick Foligno of the Columbus Blue Jackets, and I played for the Sudbury Wolves in the OHL.
Well, Sam, you were there Friday. It was a juggernaut of an evening for the Oshawa Generals and their fans. Maybe the loudest that I've seen. It did resonate on television. You could really get a sense of the energy and the enthusiasm of that Oshawa Generals crowd as they took out the Erie Otters in five games. Play-by-play voice of the Oshawa Generals, Mike Luck, joins us now. Mike, you were there as well. What was the atmosphere like in your words?
Unbelievable, Jeff. I've never seen the General Motors Center that excited, and it's a series that kind of had it all. Of course, you had the Generals and a team that dominated the CHL rankings for a good spell in the season, and then you had the Connor McDavid factor. You had a lot of fans there that weren't necessarily junior hockey fans to start the season, but were there for the series.
So, Mike, I'm looking at this hockey club, and all year, you almost get the sense, or at least we did when we went in there, you know, in their round one against Peterborough, that this was a team that was playing with a chip on its shoulder, that, hey, we didn't get the national attention, we didn't get a national game here until the playoffs. You know, we're the best defensive team, yet we, you know, other than maybe Michael Del Cole, we don't really have that rock star player. Do you think that's something that DJ Smith used to help motivate his club, or was that just being a little sensitive when we had gotten in there at the start of the playoffs?
No, you know what, I think, Sam, I think it goes back a lot further than that, actually. I mean, the way that they lost out last year in a sweep to North Bay, and then after that, they started off the CHL rankings, and Oshawa didn't get a sniff. And there were people in the paper, some who say they're in the know, who ranked the team to finish ninth in the East. And I think that's what kind of got DJ Smith started, and said he had 17 returning players on his team from a team that went to the Eastern Final last year, and they didn't feel they were getting any kind of respect. The national attention, I think the fans look more at that than the players do, but they certainly started with the season with a chip on their shoulder and went on an incredible run.
They did, and it was an inspired squad. It was a fun team to watch, and Sam and I were making the point before you joined us that maybe the most underrated blue line of any high-end team in the entire CHL, when you look at Van de Soppel and Brown and Carlisle and Dakota Mermis, maybe the most underrated back end of any of the heavyweights, Mike?
Yeah, you know what? You looked at Josh Brown and a guy who was drafted but had a tough time signing and came back for his overage year because he didn't like what he saw in a professional contract. And same goes for Dakota Mermis as well. Once they picked him up at the trade deadline, a guy that, you know, everyone thought McCarron was the sparkle of that deal. And it came down that the London experience, I mean, this is going to be Dakota Mermis' third straight Memorial Cup. It's the guy that has incredible experience in going through this kind of playoff pressure and what it takes to get there. And on a team that didn't have that much experience, he plays a huge role.
You know, oftentimes general managers will make deals throughout the course of the year, and you wonder how those things are going to work out. But I think what Roger Hunt did in bringing in the two guys that you just talked about, and then bringing in Matt Mistley, just a fascinating character to me because he's a wonderful kid. You get to talk to him. He's a very engaging, wonderful guy. And you go back to his draft year and you say, here's a guy that at some point through the course of his draft year, people had him in first round consideration. Now that didn't quite work out and he was injured and, you know, there was some stuff going on in Plymouth that didn't maybe allow him to play his game, but that was a really well thought out move. And I think all of the additions that Roger Hunt made, really, I don't know if Oshawa is where it is without those additions. Is that safe to say, Mike?
Oh, I absolutely agree with you there, Sam. It's a, it's a case where Matt Nistley, you know, Oshawa's got a reputation almost now of having guys with incredible talent, and maybe the knock on them is their skating. You go back to even John Tavares, Michael Dal Cole, and now Matt Nistley, a guy who a lot of people thought, well, you know, it's the skating is a tough part of his game, and he's a streaky scorer. But, you know, once the moves were made, this team took a bit of a dip in January, and it kind of had to sort it out, and DJ Smith had to work out who's going to play with who, and you really brought on a lot of first-line players and guys who are used to huge minutes who would have to, you know, kind of rework their game to play in a shift or two less per period. And it certainly took an adjustment, but boy, he's got them rolling now.
It certainly does. They will face off against Rimouski on the Saturday afternoon in day two of the MasterCard Memorial Cup. A lot of players to be happy for. Certainly a player like Michael Dal Cole, Cole Castles, we talked about earlier on, Hunter Smith. Boy, I remember when he first joined the Oshawa Generals that first year. And the real improvements that he's made from day one are outstanding. But the one guy that I keep coming back to, and we touched on it in the opening segment, Mike, I feel great for Ken Appleby. And here's a kid whose confidence was shaken at various times, playing, you know, backup for a couple of years. And to hear the crowd Friday chanting his name, that was real special for that young man.
Yeah, and when you talk about class kids, Ken Appleby is right at the top of the rank. He's such a nice young man. Didn't really get his shot behind Daniel Altschuler, who played so well for Oshawa last year and logged a ton of minutes. And, you know, for those who don't follow it closely, you're looking like the backup to Martin Brodeur kind of thing. He barely got in and got in the final game of the season in the playoffs against North Bay last year. And then he was one of the big question marks on the Oshawa team coming in. Could Ken Appleby be a starting goaltender in this league and carry the Oshawa Generals as deep as they've gone? And the answer is yes. He was phenomenal. Right through. Jeremy Brodeur took a little bit of an adjustment period when he first got in September, and then his numbers started to get better so he could spell Ken off through the second half of the season, give him a little rest and give DJ Smith that confidence to rest Ken Appleby a little bit and get him ready for a long playoff run. But since then, he's taken the ball and rolled, and when he has faltered, he bounced back, and that's the mark of a really good goaltender. It's a bad goal, bad game. The next one's going to be a good one.
You know, Mike, it's been really fun for me to watch the emergence of Cole Castles, and I look at him now and I say, this guy's a pro. I mean, all day long, he's a pro. And to me, and I opined to Jeff earlier in the podcast that I thought he was the best player in the series. You know, Ken Appleby was great. You know, Connor McDavid was really good when the games were in Erie, but through the course of the whole series, Cole Castles was the best player, and to me, it wasn't even close. When you know, you've covered him an awful lot here. When is it that you saw Cole Castles take the next step to make him look like the guy he is today?
I think really it comes near the start of the season, probably in mid to late October, when things were firing well. Michael Dal Cole gets a lot of the spotlight offensively on the team for good reason. He's a talent. And Cole Castles, people kind of underestimated him. He was a third-round pick of Vancouver, which is working out to be a steal now. And a guy who, it's just his competitive drive is incredible. He hates to lose and studies every aspect. He wants to win every face-off. He wants to finish every check. And although he puts up great points, he's got 31 points in 21 playoff games, it's his shutdown role. He loves that shutdown role, and he knew his assignment is always going to be the best player on the other team and try to shut them down. They work as a five-man unit in that role against Connor McDavid, and he was great. And Cole's competitive edge, much of it probably comes from watching his dad, Andrew Castles, in the NHL to start his life. And my goodness, he's bloomed into, I agree with you, a complete pro. He's going to have a long pro career.
Does he remind you at all when you look at, you know, the complete package, you know, the two-way player, both sides of the puck, et cetera? Does he remind you of another ex-general from not that long ago, Boone Jenner at all?
Well, that's exactly it. Boone Jenner, even Scott Laughton, who was a little more offensive than defensive, but Boone Jenner was a guy whose I think his imprint is all over this team, because he's the one that the coaches talk about when it comes to work ethic. You got to be like Boone Jenner, and he was phenomenal as both an offensive and a defensive, a great two-way forward in his game. And Cole Castles has rounded into that. And you know what? A lot of it the credit has to go to maybe an unsung hero, and it's not Derek Wellwood behind the bench, a guy who played that role when he was in Windsor, and his job there with their Memorial Cup run was to shut down John Tavares when he played for London in that Western Conference final, and did it. And so I think his influence and DJ Smith's defensive mind of the game as well helps pay dividends to the two-way game that Cole Castles has developed.
You know, it's funny because I look at DJ Smith and watched him throughout his time in Windsor. And, you know, the one thing, he's a loud, boisterous guy, and he likes to have a good time and joke around. He's got a wonderful sense of humor. But people don't realize just how well prepared he is and how good of a coach this guy is. I mean, he played a much larger role than people would give him credit for the two back-to-back wins in 09 and 2010 for Windsor. And, you know, I think, you know, Warren Reichel and Bob Bugner knew that at some point he was going to get a shot. It just kind of worked out to be the perfect storm where Rocco Tullio was from Windsor. You know, Jeff Toohey decided that he'd open his mind and think outside the box when he hired him. But talk a little bit about DJ, Mike, because I have really strong feelings about his ability to coach, and I don't think it ends here at the Canadian Hockey League level. I think he's in the AHL before too long.
Yeah, I agree, or higher. Yeah, it's incredible. His I kind of laugh sometimes and joke on the broadcast that it's like he's playing Xbox. He's yelling out instructions to the players, and he's basically playing the game from the bench, and they're listening to it, and he's maneuvering everything. I had a chance to sit with Dale Mitchell, former Oshawa General and Windsor Spitfire and a Maple Leafs pick, during that final game on Friday, and he said he's the favorite coach he's ever worked for or played for, and that was as an associate coach in Windsor. DJ Smith's mind for the game, his preparation is second to none. He's a guy who he gets noted for being loud and boisterous, but you also notice, if you do notice on the bench, he doesn't need any notes. He knows every player on his team and the other side. He knows the matchups he wants. He uses statistics and Corsi and things that he needs to do to keep up to the game at this level in this day and age, and he is completely prepared for what's in front of him on the ice, and he's got his team prepared. He played really four different types of series in his OHL playoffs. He had to play Peterborough first, which they could handle a little easier. Niagara, he had to worry about Josh Hosang and some first-line talent up front. Then it was North Bay, the defensive juggernaut and the trap of Ben Butler. And then finally, he had to deal with the highlight of Connor McDavid. And he got his team, steered him right through all of them.
Did a great job. And Michael, we'll end on this question. This was vindication, certainly, for the East. The West has ruled the roost, as we all know, for quite some time in the Ontario Hockey League. Do you think this will be the beginning of a trend where the champions of the OHL come out of the East?
It's so tough to predict at this level now. The West was so strong, and I think everyone was just shocked to St. Marie wasn't at the end. I think that's the team most people in the East were preparing for and trying to see, boy, how can you match up with the moves that they made at the deadline, and Boland and Richie and D'Angelo, all these big names going over, and plus you had Darnell Nurse there. And so I think you're going to see still a lot of depth from the West. And I don't know if there's that big divide in how they play the game, the style difference between the East and the West. The West is still very high scoring, but you've got such solid franchises on the West side, the Kitcheners, the Londons, and now the Sioux, who've been so good and dominant, that those teams are always in it, and you can never discount them. But that being said, the East has been really a surprise side. You know, the Kingston Frontenacs were a team that, you know, everyone, I think, off the start of the year thought they were going to be fantastic, and they went through so many injuries and just a tough rut that it knocked them off. But boy, I can't say this is the return of dominance of the Eastern Conference, but certainly they've laid a statement.
And the Generals and their fans will certainly enjoy it while it lasts. Mike, great job this season. Take a bow. You did some fantastic work, and really great job, by the way, doing studio when the series shifted to Erie. That was really some riveting stuff as I was glued to the OHL action pack. So fantastic work this year, and I guess enjoy the MasterCard Memorial Cup.
I certainly will do. Thanks so much, guys.
All right, there you go. That is the play-by-play voice of the Oshawa Generals, Mike Luck. When we return, Kelowna Rockets head coach Dan Lambert. Don't go anywhere.
Hi, I'm Seth Jones of the Nashville Predators, and I played for the Portland Winterhawks of the Western Hockey League.
Well, Sam, as you all know, since the introduction of the round-robin format in 1972, the Western Hockey League has won 19 MasterCard Memorial Cups. And Dan Lambert and the Kelowna Rockets would like to make that 20. Thank you very much. The Rockets head coach joins us now. First of all, Dan, congratulations. Boy, was that impressive. I don't think anyone had you guys sweeping the Brandon Wheat Kings. Boy, did you do a number on Kelly McCrimmon's squad. Did that even surprise you?
Well, yeah, it did for sure. But in saying that, I mean, we have to be realistic that, you know, a number of those games certainly could have gone either way. When you consider, it was probably us scoring shorthanded goals that was the difference in the series.
When I look at that series, I hearken back to the Portland series, and you'd been there as an assistant coach for, you know, the nemesis, the kryptonite, if you will, for Kelowna in three of the last 4 years. How important do you think it was to win that series to kind of give you guys the momentum moving into the championship against Brandon?
Oh, there's no doubt that I think we learned a lot about our squad, about ourselves in that series. Certainly when Portland took a lead of 2-1, I think that's when we really raised our game and really, I don't want to say we came together, but we really felt like, oh my gosh, like we better do something here because this could all come to a close and us being on the wrong side of things once again. And I really have to turn, you know, to our leaders, the guys that have been here, the Madison Bowies, the Tyson Baileys, the Linekers and Cole Martins. I mean, these guys, you know, really took it upon themselves to make sure that we, you know, we at least, if we were going to go down, we were going to go down playing our best hockey, and I thought that we did that.
How special was it for Jackson Whistle? He's from Kelowna, to win the WHL championship. The local boy does good.
Well, it was huge, and you know what? Throughout these playoffs, the thing that frustrates me is there was a lot of naysayers about Jackson, and you know, there's certainly in the first three rounds, we probably don't win, I guess, as quickly without Jackson Whistle, and maybe we don't win at all because in early on in the series, in every series, he was outstanding, and he certainly won us some hockey games, and then you know. He had troubles closing things out for us, and Michael Herringer stepped in and did a great job with that. But in saying that, everybody was questioning, oh, should Jackson Whistle start the next series? And should, you know, and that frustrated me because Jackson's been our starter all year long. And I certainly felt, not just I, but our organization felt 100% that he was our guy. And he proved it in the end that, you know, he can close things out.
You know, everyone talks about the goalie, and rightfully so when it comes to playoffs. But for me, when I look at your hockey club, you know, the Leon Draisaitl thing was something that, you know, that had to be successful. Like he had to have success. He had to find a way to readjust his game back to the Canadian Hockey League level, the Western Hockey League in particular. It took a little while, and we saw it in person when we had done some of your games. When, Dan, do you feel that he looked ultimately comfortable, be it with his line mates or as a guy who, coming back from the NHL, played like a guy who you know, came back from the NHL?
You know what? Throughout the time that he was here during the regular season, there's no doubt that there was, there were nights when he was by far the best player on the ice. And we all know that he had that capability. But I think for me as a coach, you know, at least I believe that even in the first two games of the playoffs, he looked nervous. And knowing Leon, it was probably because he put the pressure of us having success on his own shoulders. And once he realized that, you know what, like I've got a real good supporting cast here, and yes, I need to be good, but I don't need to be to carry the team on my own, on my shoulders. Once he recognized that fact, that's when I thought that he really played his best. And really came out of his shadow.
Take us back to game two of the Brandon series when you put that Draisaitl, Chartier, Merkley line together. Why'd you do that?
Well, what happened is Rourke wasn't going to play the first two games of that series. He had been scuffed up a little bit, when we flew into Brandon, the thought was that he wasn't playing. And it wasn't until game day that day that Rourke said, I'm good to go. Now, obviously, you know, we had to make sure that it wasn't just him, but, you know, that is how Rourke is. What happened is the first game, he played more on the fourth line and still played power play and penalty kill, but it, more of a lesser role, just to make sure that he was okay, first and foremost, to make sure that he felt okay going into battle. And then, you know, he wasn't necessarily facing the most, the best lines from the opposition and then the most physical guys or whatever. So once that game was over, then the second game starts. I didn't like our start, so for one shift, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to put those three together and see if Schartz can handle playing on the wing, even though, you know, being scuffed up, you don't necessarily want to be on the wing. And they scored a goal. And then it was easy. It really was. And then, it certainly, was an easy decision then to keep them together, because we felt they had real good, chemistry and they wanted to play together.
You know, Merkley is a fascinating guy to me, and I said on that show draft year that it was going to take a period of adjustment, because over the last, year and really right up to the trade deadline as a 16/17-year-old, he did everything. He played in all the important situations. I mean, he did everything above and beyond the expectations of someone his age on a really good team would do, and I thought it would take an adjustment when Leon Draisaitl came, maybe taking and having to share some of those minutes, so on and so forth, but he looks to me like he's back at that elite level, top 15, first round type of player. What are your thoughts on Merkley and how he's progressed, maybe since the time Leon came in to where he is right now?
Well, there is no doubt that Nick, had an adjustment to make. I think for a while he was trying to do too much. I think he was trying to maybe prove to the world that he was, he was capable of keeping up what he was doing, and in that, I guess, for that reason, he was trying to do too much all of a sudden, and certainly there was a big adjustment for him. But I think what's really helped him, Nick is an unbelievable kid, but the one thing that's really helped him is the fact that him and Leon have they've really created a nice friendship. That Leon's taken him under his wing a little bit, and I think at first Nick was in awe of Leon, where now they're friends. I mean, and the everything that they've shared together as far as winning hockey games and then growing together, learning how to win is going to be probably a friendship that will last a lifetime.
You know, we go back to March, and Dan Bylsma shows up with you guys. Was there anything specific that he worked with your team on?
Dan was here for, he ran, I want to say, four practices. It was three full practices and then one pregame skate. And I gave Dan the reins of the team, and we discussed a lot of things while he was here. We sat here in the coach's room, myself and my assistants and Dan, it was really like getting a doctorate in hockey. But it wasn't, he didn't change everything, but what he did change and helped us with was the language to simplify things. And once he was able to do that, maybe the biggest thing was once the guys bought into that, because truth be known, and I certainly called Dan after that and joked about it with him, is when he was here, we played one game and we lost that game easily, and then we lost again after that. So I certainly called him. I said, "Thanks, Dan. You got us going in the wrong direction." But we knew that. It was just new to everyone, the language and the buy-in. But I truly, strongly believe that we may not be here if it weren't for Dan Bylsma coming to spend some time, not only with the team, but certainly with the coaches, because it was great for everybody involved.
So when you look at that situation now, I go back to 2012. Eric Veilleux was the coach of Shawinigan. They lost in round two. They were off for 39 days, I think it was. Bob Hartley was his mentor. Bob Hartley was not working in the National Hockey League at that time, and really worked behind the scenes with Shawinigan to help get them over the hump and eventually win. Is that something that you can do now with Dan, in terms of being able to use him between now and when you guys leave, if maybe you've already done that, or once you get to Quebec City, do you guys plan on having him there, or someone that you can continue to call on when you might need an ear on how to change or do something different?
You know, there's a number of guys that I've called upon, either it's ex-coaches that I played for or friendships I've made along the way. Dan is certainly one of them. He's been busy at the World Championships with Team USA over the last, you know, few weeks. So, but in saying that, all along before he left for Europe, he was watching our games. He was giving us feedback. He was cheering for us. And, you know, so whether he has plans to go to Quebec City or not, I'm going to wait for him to come back from Europe before, you know, I get a chance to talk to him. But certainly, you know, he and a few other guys are guys that I continuously lean on, and that probably won't change maybe for the rest of my coaching career.
Dan, we'll leave you on this one. You won a Memorial Cup in 1989 with Swift Current, and one of the most emotional victories the tournament has ever seen. Now you're going to be coaching in the tournament, heading up the Kelowna Rockets. When you look back at 1989, and boy, were you outstanding in that tournament, the entire season you were. What comes to mind right away when you think back of your Memorial Cup win in 89?
Well, you know what? When we look back at that you know, obviously a lot of things have happened to, that team prior, obviously the bus accident, and then, yep. You know, moving forward, the Graham James saga, I guess, or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, and certainly there's a lot of things that it kind of gives you mixed emotions. But the one thing that will never change is our group of players that won together. We have a bond that I think is extremely special for many reasons. And when we had a reunion at the 20-year mark, it was really special. And I think everybody was a little bit on pins and needles going into that reunion. But once we all got together, it was as if we never left our side, each other's side. So I think, you know, when I look at that and I think of our team here, I want nothing more nothing more than for our players to experience that, because once you you win a championship together, you literally have a special bond, and I want our players, because of the family type of relationship they have with one another, I want them to experience that.
Well, we look forward to them going through that as you do as well. Best of luck on Friday as you open up against the Quebec Ramparts, and best of luck the entire tournament.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
There he is, the head coach of the Kelowna Rockets, 2015 Ed Chinoth Cup winners, top team in the Western Hockey League. They go in rested. Interesting conversation there about Dan Bylsma. And at this level, we tend to forget that, you know, everybody has mentors. Players have mentors. You talked about a player like Nick Merkley really looking up to someone like Leon Draisaitl, and coaches aren't that different either. And bringing in someone like Dan Bylsma, that really goes a long way to talk about the character of Dan Lambert, where most coaches might feel threatened to bring in someone who's, you know, won a Stanley Cup, has the resume that Dan Bylsma has. Lambert felt none of that and sort of opened up the doors and said, hey, you take the keys, you drive this team for a few days.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. I mean, and he's a smart enough guy to realize that that's how you're going to get the best benefit. That's how it's going to impact his team the most. It's just kind of let him do his things his way. Because when you look at being with a coach all year, you know, you start in the preseason, then you go through the whole season, and then you go through a long playoff run and win a championship. Every now and then, it's nice to hear a different voice. It's nice to hear someone say the same things, maybe in a different manner or in a different way, or using, as Danny said, you know, different language. So you know, good on him for doing that. And, you know, faux pas on my part for completely just focused on Memorial Cup, forgetting about Bylsma and the, you know, in the World Championships. But wouldn't surprise me if he showed up in Quebec City. Not at all. I mean, all the general managers are going to be there. So if he's looking for a job, that's, you know, a good place to be. Catch up with Dan Lambert and the Kelowna Rockets team, in which he's played a hand in getting him to this part. Fascinating as well. But here's the thing about Dan Lambert. The way he talks, this guy was a rock star as a player. Yeah, he was an unbelievable player.
Yes, he was.
You know, RJ tells me all the time playing in Swifty, and, you know, I never got to watch him play as a junior, but an unbelievable player. And you know what's kind of cool about this whole thing, Jeff, is he's played in 29 National Hockey League games, all for the Quebec Nordiques, and he gets to return to the Colisée. That's probably going to be a pretty cool feeling for him.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the stories that we follow. As soon as we get there, and that's the next order of business, Sam, getting on planes and flying to Quebec City for the 97th edition of the MasterCard Memorial Cup. Nice thing about this year's tournament, and with all due respect, you know, the underdogs, and it's always a fun story. Man, do we have powerhouses going at it. Rimouski, Quebec, Oshawa, and Kelowna. No Cinderella teams here, just powerhouses, Sam.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. You know, if I can make a point, unfortunately, I don't get to travel you on the private Merrick jet, so I'll be flying with the common folk out there tomorrow.
I'm flying with the livestock in the back of the plane, Sam.
Well, good. I'll keep the seat warm for you. No, but you know, it should be an awesome cup. I mean, when isn't it really? And I think the cool thing for me, regardless of whether or not Quebec ends up winning tonight, maybe we can put to bed, at least for a little while, the whole, oh, the host is not worthy, yada, yada, yada. Because I hate going into the event, and the first thing that everyone wants to talk about is, well, we got to change the format. That just drives me nuts. I think sometimes you got to sit back, you got to accept it for what it is, enjoy it, embrace it, and say, you know what? Who knows if it's going to change in the future or not? It's not changing this year, so let's embrace it. And the thing is, how many times, Jeff, has this happened where you go into this time of year, everyone wants to talk about the format, and you forget about the Oshawa Generals, the Kelowna Rockets, unbelievable run sweeping Brandon. You look at the 7-game series between the two Quebec teams. I mean, those are the things we should be talking about. So put the format to bed. The format is what it is this year. Who knows if it changes in the future? And you know, you at least have a host that for sure is going to be a finalist, if not a league champion.
Yeah, amen. Should be a great one. All right, Sam, look forward to seeing you in Quebec City in a couple of days. We'll rejoin, I guess I'll see you on Thursday for the CHL banquet. So we'll catch up with you then.
You got it. Sounds good, Jeff.
There we go. On behalf of Sam Cosentino and our producer, Matt Brown, thanks for listening to another edition of Junior. Next stop, the MasterCard Memorial Cup in Quebec City. We'll talk to you next week.